From KUER News in Salt Lake City, this is Radio West. I'm Doug Fabrizio. It was just supposed to be a quick job for Manhattan filmmaker Michael Rosato Bennett. A Long Island social worker had asked him to come along to a nursing home to film what he had been seeing. The man had been taking iPods into these facilities and putting headphones onto the heads of patients who suffered from various versions of dementia, and then he would push play. And Michael Rosato Bennett saw these patients, many of them frozen or catatonic, come alive when they heard the music. That moment has become a feature documentary which premiered at the Sundance Film Festival last year. It's being screened next week in Salt Lake City, so today in the program we're rebroadcasting our conversation about it. The film is called Alive Inside. Join us after the news. This week on Video West, meet Trent Pearson. He's a software engineer, has 8 kids, lives in American Fork. And when he was 10, he started to create his own language. He's finished the project now. It's called Idrani, and it helps him see the world as it could be. Go see the short film we made at videowest.org. This is Radio West. I'm Doug Fabrizio. If you're like millions of others, you've seen the clip on YouTube of Henry, the 94-year-old gentleman in a Brooklyn nursing home who sits practically catatonic in a wheelchair until he starts to hear music in headphones. If you saw it, you were looking at an excerpt of a film called Alive Inside. It's the story of an effort to get music into nursing homes around the country, around the globe, really. And the film explores the psychology behind music, how it works on the brain, how it can be this back door into the mind of someone with dementia. But it's also a film about where the elderly have ended up in modern culture and what it means to share music. How the director Michael Rosato Bennett says in the film, seeing Henry wake up does something to all of us. We spoke with Rosato Bennett when the film premiered at the Sundance Film Festival last year. Next week, it's being screened in Salt Lake City. We'll give you more details about that as we go along. Alive Inside is his first feature-length documentary. We were also joined on the phone by Dan Cohen. He is the founder and executive director of the nonprofit organization Music and Memory. His work is the subject of the film. Originally, Michael Rosato Bennett says he was hired to create a short film and build a website for Music and Memory.
But at first, it was really just a job to me, you know, like any other sort of working filmmaker. You know, we do whatever anybody hires us to do.
Yeah.
And that was really all it was, is Dan took me into a nursing home. And I think I'm like most people. I was walking through these hallways, and I saw all these old people just in wheelchairs, most of them, some of them slumped over.
Yeah.
It was actually a terrifying place to be. It's a place that I think most of us really don't want to go there, even to visit. I mean, there are some places that are much more beautiful and almost like hotel-like in their presentation, and the colors are pretty, but there are a lot of very institutional nursing homes out there, and the one we went into, while it was run by some amazing people, and that's one of the distinctions about these places, is that all of the people drawn to this kind of work are not all of them, but most of them, and a surprising number of them, are amazingly beautiful people.
Yeah. You make that point clearly in the film.
Well, I really felt obligated to do that, because when you're kind of throwing some barbs at an institution, you certainly don't want to reduce the importance of the work of the people that are in those institutions, because to tell you the truth, they are working hard and with everything they have to make a difference in these people's lives. But the system that we've created is literally terrifying.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm walking in through these halls, and you know, honestly, when I was a child, I had all these operations on my ears, and I literally vowed never to enter a hospital ever again.
Wow.
You know, and here I was kind of going into this place, I'm just trying to tell you how scary it was for me.
Yeah.
Just as, you know, you get this anxiety in your body when you're in a place like this and you're not there, you know, for any, you know, because you have to. And it just, you know, the first thing you think of is like, oh, my God, like, what is life like for these people who must end their entire life in this sort of a situation? And so, you know, Dan just basically we brought out this person that he'd been dealing with before, and it was Henry. Henry was actually the first person we ever filmed.
Wow.
And, you know, he knew – Dan knew that Cab Calloway was this guy's favorite music.
Yep, yep.
And we put it on his ears – and it was amazing to see the difference in him, how he went from this kind of completely separate from life. He was off in some dark place of his mind that he found safety and comfort in. Yeah. And then the music kind of brought him out of that into another place.
Yeah.
And it was beautiful to watch at first. You know, it it was so amazing because people were around the edges. This was kind of like an event at the nursing home, and you know, there were a couple people there, and I felt chills just literally run up my body to see a human who was off turn on, and everybody around felt, and you know, so that was phenomenally exciting. And I'll tell you, my own naivete is like I remember going home that night and saying to my wife, I think we found the cure for Alzheimer's.
Yeah, right.
You know, and but you know, it was a learning process for me to actually learn what happened and what it meant. And then it took years, actually, for the ramifications of what we were seeing to become evident.
I want to play a couple of clips from the film that sort of convey this what seems to be – and what I love about it is how personal it is for you, this kind of epiphany for you. This first moment we'll hear, you'll hear Oliver Sacks, and we'll talk a little bit about him a little bit later. He's the acclaimed neurologist most people know, of course. And he talks about how music is not just this physiological thing. And then we'll hear Yvonne, who's helping Henry. She's in the nursing home there. And then you're going to hear Henry singing a little bit. It's a lovely moment in the film. It's hard to convey in an audio way, as well as you can in visual. But I want people to hear it because it's a really important moment in the film for obvious reasons. And you'll hear Henry ask if he can sing too, which is a lovely moment. And then I want to have you talk a little bit more about that. Here's a clip from the film, Alive Inside, A Story of Music and Memory.
Music is not just a physiological stimulus. If it works at all, it will call the whole person.
I hear it. Do you hear it?
Yeah. I will sing with this.
You can if you like. When I first met him, he was very isolated, and he used to always sit on the unit with his head like this. He didn't really talk to much people, and then when I introduced the music to him, this is his reaction ever since.
You say that Henry waking up did something to all of us.
Yeah.
What do you mean?
You know, after exploring this whole area, what I came to literally sort of be awakened myself to is the centrality of music inside of us as human beings. You know, music is something that literally. Music lights up more of the brain than any other human stimulus, which is a phenomenal concept. And why is that? It's because there literally is no music place in the brain. You know, we have cobbled our capacity to experience music from our visual senses, from our auditory senses, from our memory, from our emotional sense, from our even our movement sense, okay? And this thing we call music that we don't really talk about very much. We talk about songs we like, but this thing called music is, I think it's one of our primary technologies. I think it's one of our first and most magnificent technologies that the human beings have developed. And because it's so all-encompassing in the brain, since it uses so much of the brain, when Alzheimer's and dementia sort of erases the brain, in some very deep places, this sort of holographic musical entity remains. And that's why it seems spared in Alzheimer's, almost to the very end. And if you can excite emotion or even movement in a person, it can wake up pathways. And so what where I'm going is in the process of making this film, I kind of began to understand how important music is to us as a species. And we are vibratory entities. We're made to vibrate together and to move in harmony, to move in beat together. You know, I think music is actually the core of human faith. You know, like all of our religions are actually contained in music. And so it's almost a religious experience to see a being that has been shut down through drugs, through an isolated environment, through no, you know, 40% of people in nursing homes get zero visitors. Zero. I mean, this is the end of someone's life, you know, and to end in such isolation has a cost. And as Naomi Feal in the film says, she says, you know, people turn inward. They shut off. They become what she calls living dead people, you know, which is a phenomenally scary concept, you know, and not how we think we should end life. So what I experienced was this almost physiological reaction in myself and in other people. You know, it like that's what's so profound about what Dan is doing. It's so simple, and it can almost seem like of course, you know, yeah, get people their music, and we're done.
Yeah,
you know, but it awakens everybody. You know, it awakens the person. And more importantly, even perhaps it awakens the person who brings the music to them, you know. And then it's a communal awakening. If you're as lucky as I was, and Dan is, and these people in institutions that get to administer this, I hate the word administer, but who get to give this gift, you know, that and I've watched it. I've watched, like, it's so amazing, because like when a person is in a nursing home, okay, yeah, you give them their music. What do you experience on the outside? Nothing. Do you get what I'm saying? Like, you put headphones on them. Who's listening to the music? Just them, right? When they start to awake, okay, I've seen in the room, like, it's literally like a wave coming off of them, wow. Okay? And people all over the room literally start, like, moving or, like, waking up, literally. I mean, I've caught it with my cameras. It's... I don't understand it. It's like when a human being awakes, it is like a radio broadcast. Hmm. I mean, it sends waves out, just as the opposite seems to happen. You know, if you put people in a place and everyone's shutting down, it's almost as like they all begin to move in sync in that way.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, I'm just an amateur in this, but this is what I have observed. And this is part of the gift that I think, you know, music and memory has to give. And we've, you know, Dan had this vision of bringing music to a million people. And that's a phenomenal, like, simple mission. And it this is so doable that it's almost you know, we have to do this as a people just because it is so doable, so inexpensive, and such a gift.
Let me ask Dan Cohen with us. You make this pretty clear in the film. You're not a neurologist. You're a social worker. You know, worked in the computer industry for a time. Dan Cohen, how do you describe your connection with music? What was the thing that I mean, Michael's been talking about his epiphany with all of this. What was your moment?
Well, my moment was really, I'm not a musician. I mean, there's no special, I'm sort of typical person around music. I mean, I have lots of music that I love, but so does everybody. And I think the epiphany for me really was watching that reaction that Michael described so well. When people, you know, for all of us, we have music right at our fingertips. So there's no, every time we turn it on and off, there's no major leap in sort of change in our consciousness necessarily. I mean, there might be if it's a song we really love and we might be really depressed or something or low. But for these folks who've been separated from their music for years or even decades, that change, that filling that gap is so huge, and their response is so noticeable. That really is what caught my eye. And I said, gee, no matter what, even if systems don't change and it might be difficult to make this happen, I'm going to keep trying because I see what it's doing for these folks. And it's just such a, it is such a, you know, a gift. I mean, it's sort of, we're using that term a lot, but it really is. There's very little you can give someone. For someone who has a family member with Alzheimer's disease and the holidays come along, well, what do you give them as a gift? Do you give them a thing? Do you give them flowers? Do you give them candy? You know, all of those things are transient. But the music is a gift that changes someone's life for the rest of their life. So to me, that was what the power of this.
The musician Bobby McFerrin, you feature him in the film. And I love this moment because he gives you this sense that music, something that you were just saying a moment ago, Michael, I think this idea that for some reason we're all connected to it in some way. And so Bobby McFerrin in this clip from the film talks about that, how everyone just kind of knows it. It's sort of embedded in us in some way. Here's Bobby McFerrin from the film Alive Inside.
I wondered how everyone knows that, regardless of what country I'm in. It seems like everyone knows that. Now, how is that possible if it wasn't already inside you?
Michael Rosato Bennett, do you think you have a better sense of that now?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I've actually told this story a couple times showing the film that there were some amazing epiphanies for me in the making of this one. One thing was, is I came up to people like Mary Lou Thompson, okay, who really, she couldn't even tell the difference between a fork and a knife and a spoon, right? She was unable to do that and unable to put on her coat, unable to even know how to press a button on an elevator. She had no idea of where she was. And yet, well, one day she hugged me after we were together, and her hug was so pure, and there was so much love inside of her, like her capacity to transmit her love was undiminished. And that was a huge shock to me. You know, I was like, wait, I thought these people were all gone. So you're telling me that in their capacity to feel love is not diminished. Okay, all right. And then we gave Mary Lou music. And when she had her music, again, the world was reduced to what she could still understand. And her reaction to that music was, again, profound. Like, she so phenomenally enjoyed the music, so phenomenally gave her just everything to it. And then I kind of went home, and I was like, oh, my God. This woman who has nothing actually experiences music on a deeper level than I do. And I was like, wait a minute, how can that be? I'm a creative guy, I'm a filmmaker, I'm a guitar player. How can this woman like experience music deeper than I do?
Yeah.
And I went into my room and I turned out all the lights and I took my own music and I put it on headphones. And I just challenged my own self. I said, all right, Mike, I want you to feel music like these people do. Let yourself feel music like that. And I went into my own music and I tried to feel it like they do, to let it into like literally like the into my heart, into my bones, into my memory, into my, and let it trigger my emotions. And you know what? It's not so hard to do, you know, and I felt it. I let myself feel, I opened myself to my own music. And like, I think that this is something that everyone should experience, you know, because there is really, I mean, besides love, music is literally one of our human treasures, I feel. And the idea that we don't really experience it as deeply as we could is interesting. And the idea that these people who have so little can actually teach us this is just phenomenal to me.
Dan Kona, one of the things that comes up in the film is this question of when our relationship with music really begins. I mean, physiologically, as human beings. I wanted to get your sense. I know you're not a neurologist, but I did want to get your sense of, because this comes up, this idea that, you know, the film talks about at around 22 days, something starts to beat, which awakens the cells, and they all begin to beat in unison, the cells with the heart. And Michael talks about this desire to beat in unison sort of fuels our entire lives. What do you think you understand about our relationship, sort of our physiological, deeply inside embedded relationship with, you know, a beat, with rhythm, with music? Is that the thing that helps understand our connection to it?
Well, it's so interesting with the advent of functional scanning, the ability to scan our brains and watch its functioning. The neuroscientists and others around the world have learned an awful lot about the brain and its reaction to music. But with everything they've learned, it's posed other questions. So there's still a magic to it, and there's still a mystery to it. Even though we can see when even Oliver Sacks was had his brain scan, and as he's listening to his favorite classical music, and his whole brain lights up. I don't really know. You know, we can think about that. When I listen to music that I love, and I think, well, how am I feeling? What am I thinking? You know, I'm loving this music. Is it the beat? Is it the melody? Why does it resonate with me so much, this particular song? You know, if we all think of our favorite songs, well, why is that song our favorite song? It's just a question I think that's really fun to pose to ourselves and to think, because it's there's no clear answer, but it's part of the mystery and the magic of music. I don't think the neuroscience has figured out that. I mean, they can see where the music is going and how different parts of the brain work together, but still there's this untouchable kind of quality to it.
That's Dan Kona. He's the founder and executive director of Music and Memory. His work is the subject of the film Alive Inside, A Story of Music and Memory. Michael Rosato Bennett produced and directed the film. It premiered at last year's Sundance Film Festival Monday evening at 7 o'clock. The Salt Lake Acting Company is screening the film. It's going to be followed by a panel discussion in partnership with the Music and Memory Coalition of Utah. The event is in conjunction with Salt Lake Acting Company's production of Blackberry Winter, which tells the story of one woman's journey through her mother's dementia. There are more details on our website, radiowest.org. We'll take a brief break. Back in a moment. You're listening to Radio West on KUER. This is Radio West. I'm Doug Fabrizio. The filmmaker Michael Rosato Bennett went to a nursing home a few years ago. Dan Kona, a man who volunteered there, wanted him to see what he was seeing, that when he gave music to elderly people who had Alzheimer's or dementia, they came alive. The result is a film called Alive Inside, which premiered at last year's Sundance Film Festival. It's screening next week in Salt Lake City, so we're taking the opportunity to rebroadcast our conversation with Rosato Bennett and with Dan Kona. So one of the things, Michael Rosato Bennett, that you talk about, you get to in the film, sort of explore, is how, you know, we have 5 million people in this country with, you know, Alzheimer's and dementia. 1 million of them are in nursing homes, as you point out in the film. And a big part of the film is how it is that we got here. I want to play a clip from a man named Bill Thomas.
Dr. Bill Thomas.
You want to say something about him and the role that he plays in the film?
Well, Dr. Bill Thomas is pretty much an amazing person. He has dedicated his life to trying to make nursing homes a better place. One of the strange things about about nursing homes is many of them are set up as a business in a way. We've created a business of taking care of elders. And I believe and I think Dr. Thomas believes as well, that there are certain conflicts of interest inherent in that relationship. And it's a very, very strange concept if you think about it, you know, like, do we make the caring of our children a business? You know, what if you – would you – I mean, some people hire nannies, but it's in their home, yeah. You know. So there's some tremendous questions raised by the inherent conflicts in that relationship.
It's thrilling to me to be able to see a person who's been without music for years and then watch how that person comes alive. I mean, that's – as a physician, that's a thrill. But – there's something behind that wonderful moment. I mean, how did that happen in the first place? Why were we able to feed and water and medicate this person, but not respond to deeply human needs that he might have?
Dan Quinone, I wanted to get your perspective on this too, because that is a big part of the film, how it is we got here. The film talks about, in some way, this was is a breakdown of some of these traditional structures in human societies, family structures, those kinds of things. How do you see it, that idea of how we got here in the first place?
Well, I take sort of a different perspective on this. I'm looking at this is where we are, and what do we do to move forward to improve the situation? So right now in the United States, each year our society cuts the amount of funding to these nursing homes. So they're saying you have the same number of people every year and you're doing the best you can, but we're going to just keep cutting that. Why is that? Because people in nursing homes don't vote. I mean, so we're not giving them the resources they need to give the kind of attention they need to improve the care that they're giving. So this is not a reflection, oh, the nursing home is bad. No, the society, we're sending the message. So we have to look at ourselves. If we're going to be institutionalizing people in such a massive scale and cutting the funding every year, so there's very little, everything has to be done for the group, sort of bingo. So if you come in and you say, well, I have this hobby and that interest and such, that's not going to be paid attention to, most likely, because they don't have the bandwidth to do things individually and to attend to people's individual quality of life, things that would really benefit them. So that's the bigger question. And so music is an easy way, something that scales and something that can reach millions of people pretty easily. But that's not the only thing. And so we really want to also when people get old, they lose their connections with others. Their relationships sort of fall away. As Michael said, so many people just never get a visitor. And the community is hesitant to visit because people are afraid of people with Alzheimer's disease or just afraid of anybody in a nursing home. And so we want to change that dynamic and make it easier for people to visit and to create relationships and to get youth and other community folks into the nursing homes to engage with the folks there so they can develop new relationships that will last the rest of their lives. And this is mutually beneficial. I mean, for the students that go into schools, we're finding they love this opportunity. With the music, they're doing something. You know, medicine does not bring about the kind of results that music does in different situations. And so students who are tech savvy and they get this, they have something to offer that the rest of society can't. So it's a big opportunity for us to move forward and to change the current status quo.
Michael, this is something that you do mention in the film, though. Right, we need to sort of address the question where we are now. But this is something that seems to occupy your mind, where we are as a society, how we got here. Say something a little bit about that, because that does seem to be something that you really deal with in the film. What happened? How did we get here? And because I read, for example, where you've talked about how we're kind of at this turning point in humanity with all this technology. We are gods, I think is how you put it. And I guess this is a big question for you.
Well, it is, because we how can I say this? So we have every story now seems to actually be a technology story. You know, every single story we have all of these problems facing us, right? And they can almost all be traced to the way technology is transforming our society. I mean, global warming, it's a technology story. You know, the fact that there are more and more, you know, the Alzheimer's population in America is 5 million now. In a little over a decade, it's going to come close to doubling. Okay, we spend $200 billion a year on elder care, on just dementia elder care, that we don't have $400 billion. We don't. It's that we can't find that money. It doesn't exist. We're not that rich, you know. So, and why is this problem there? Because people are living longer, and after you reach a certain age, your ability to have Parkinson's and Alzheimer's increases exponentially. All right, so everything is a technology story, and I believe that the way we're approaching all of these solutions is with mindsets that were developed a long time ago. Actually, the mindsets that got us to this place where we are right now. And these nursing homes are a phenomenal illustration of where we are. You know, for me, like if I were to give you or anyone in the audience, I just give them their favorite music from when they were young, you know, they would enjoy it, but it wouldn't transform their lives. And I pondered this question for a long time. Like, well, why is our giving the music to these people transforming them so incredibly? And the answer is because they're like flowers in a desert. You know, they got no water, and no water for a long, long time, to the point where when you give them a little bit of water, that little flower just blooms to life. It's like, you know, they were in the dark and you let the sun in for a moment, but it was only that incredible lack that made the giving of the music so powerful. And it made what Dan talks about bringing people from the community, or, you know, that's another aspect of the desert, you know, is that they don't have anyone coming to them saying, looking them in their eye and saying, hey, what's in there? You know, and that was the other aspect of what we were doing. We were bringing music, but we were also bringing ourselves, or we were bringing other people, you know, or we were creating an opportunity for a caregiver in the nursing home to see this person as a human being. Because when you see another person come to life, or just even simpler, when you see another person experience music, it's a commonality. It's one of our deepest actual commonalities. And one that we kind of turn our back from. I don't know if you notice, but right now, all the music the kids are listening to, it's all quantitized. What does that mean? That means the beat is done by a computer.
Yeah.
Okay? We're not computers. Okay? But we're trying to create our rhythms in a computer way. The most amazing instrument in all of music is the human voice, I believe. Now, the human voice is becoming auto-tuned. Okay? So, I mean, there's inherent reductions of the vibrational vocabulary in just the well-tempered scale that we've been using since Bach, okay, which is not, it isn't a natural, there are moments in it that are not natural. There are intervals that are not natural. So even in our music right now, we are trying to turn ourselves more into machines. That's my belief. And so for me, that's what's so exciting about this, is that I believe that inside of music are gifts and lessons for all of us. You know, we invented this technology together. And, we used to dance in circles, holding hands and with our arms on our shoulders. We used to play music that we all knew and that echoed into our past, you know. And now we're kind of discarding some of the most incredible gifts of music. And I think music has, if you listen deep enough, it has gifts that can help us through this time. Because, I mean, listen to the public conversation we have about all the problems that we have. Everybody, people become a little hopeless because it doesn't seem like, okay, our politicians, do we have faith in them? Well, not really. You know, how about our governments? Well, you know, how about our corporations? You know, and everyone's just in this kind of like, well, what can we actually believe in? You know, God. Okay, but you've got a different one than I do, and your God says that you should kill me, you know. But the one little thing that it never betrays anyone and holds our deepest wisdom is music itself. Mm. And so this is we need music right now.
I want to play another clip from the film. This is another, we'll hear Dr. Bill Thomas again. And Dan Cohen, I wanted to get your perspective on this, because the film sort of takes on the matter of taking this music and using it as an actual, you know, as an actual therapy. And it raises the question of what is medicine making of this? What is the institution making of this? And this kind of resistance that there seems to be a little bit, or there used to be anyway. I think it's maybe breaking down. The film talks a little bit about this. But here's Dr. Bill Thomas talking about in today's medical system, you know, you can write a prescription, as he'll say, but we're not as interested in the things that may be a little bit more abstract, like music. Here's another clip from the film, Alive Inside.
In today's really crazy system, I can sit down and write out a script for $1,000 a month antidepressant. No problem. Nobody asks any questions. If I want to provide a person with a $40 personal music system, that will take a lot of work. Because personal music doesn't count as a medical intervention. You see what I'm saying? It's sort of a side thing over here. The real business, trust me, is in the pill bottle.
Open for me?
Our healthcare system imagines the human being to be a very complicated machine. We figured out how to turn the dials. Blood pressure, oh, turn that down, you know. Blood sugar, oh, turn that down. We have medicines that can adjust the dials. We haven't done anything, medically speaking, to touch the heart and soul of a patient.
Dan Cohen, is that changing, do you think, or is this still the sense of resistance that you're finding?
I think it's a matter of education, but we're also, there is resistance because we've all been taught. I mean, every night you watch TV and there are just all of these drug commercials with all of the side effects and such. And we've learned that if it's something's in the form of a pill, that's the first place we go. And I like to say, well, it's important to note that research has been done which shows that 3 hours a week of music that is personally meaningful to someone who has dementia, 3 hours a week, every week for 10 months, and in 10 months, on average, their cognition will improve by 50%. Okay, so it's not a cure for the disease. They're still going to die, you know, at the same time, but their functioning, their mental functioning is going to be 50% better. Now, if somebody had invented a pill that did that, and they said, oh, take this pill and your cognition will improve 50% in 10 months, well, every doctor would be prescribing it and every family would want it. So here we have something that effectively is the same thing, only without side effects, and yet it's not being grabbed by the medical profession or the public. So here's our opportunity. It's a massive opportunity. It's a matter of people not being biased towards drugs. And I'm talking families, too, because if somebody's mom has advanced Alzheimer's, they're living home, and mom gets physical and maybe hits her daughter, and her daughter says to the doctor, Doc, please give my mom something to calm her down. Otherwise, I'm going to have to put her in a nursing home. So everybody needs to learn. We need to just be aware. I mean, doctors aren't doing this out of malice. They just don't know. So the medical profession, doctors, geriatricians, psychiatrists, psychologists, we have work to do to say, look at the results we're getting, look at the research around this, and make this the first point you go to. I mean, when we look at psychiatrists in general, we know they've moved over the last 20 years from talk therapy with increasing amounts of drugs to just pretty much, here's the drug, you know, that's it. Here's your psychotic medication or some sort of mood-altering drug. And the talk therapy has kind of disappeared because that's what insurance companies reimburse. So kind of trying to look at the way the psychiatrists aren't using talk therapy anymore. We want to use the music, the benefits of music and how music draws people out and keeps people in touch with themselves and maintains their identity and changes their mood. Just so many benefits. And if it doesn't work, well, the downside is no downside. If it does work, you have this massive upside opportunity to improve someone's life. So I think there's just a lethargy out there, and it takes, you know, you and I and awareness as you're allowing Alive Inside and the movie that Michael so wonderfully put together to communicate with the wider public. And we're hopeful and optimistic that that's what we're going to accomplish really very soon.
That's Dan Cohen. He's the founder and executive director of Music and Memory. His work is the subject of the film Alive Inside, A Story of Music and Memory. Michael Rosato Bennett produced and directed the film. It premiered at last year's Sundance Film Festival Monday evening at 7 o'clock. The Salt Lake Acting Company is screening the film. It's going to be followed by a panel discussion in partnership with the Music and Memory Coalition of Utah. The event is in conjunction with Salt Lake Acting Company's production of Blackberry Winter, which tells the story of one woman's journey through her mother's dementia. There are more details on our website, radiowest.org. We'll take another break. Back in a moment. You're listening to Radio West on KUER. This is Radio West and Doug Fabrizio. Today in the program, we're profiling a documentary by the filmmaker Michael Rosato Bennett about what happens when you give music to people with Alzheimer's. You can get a glimpse of what can happen by going to our website, radiowest.org, where you can watch an elderly man, Henry is his name, come to life when he hears the music. The film explores how music can be a backdoor into the mind, but it's also about how we treat the elderly in this culture. It's called Alive Inside, A Story of Music and Memory. One of the things that the film gets at, too, is the idea of how music can bring elderly with dementia to life, but also, in some ways, there's a bigger story about the potential for music in terms of how it treats trauma. And there's I'm not sure how you pronounce this, his name, Samite Molondo, the African musician?
Samite
Molondo. Who is with this organization, Musicians for World Harmony. You feature him in the film, talking about the way music has this ability to, I'm not sure, cure, of course, not at all, but soothe people who have gone through trauma.
I don't even know if the word soothe is correct. You know, if you think about it, like neurosis or trauma is I think it's basically the mind getting frozen. You know, you suffer something. In the film, Samite goes into a village in the Congo, where he comes up with into this whole group of women who were raped. Massively, who basically have shut down. Like the trauma that they experienced was so great that they froze.
Yeah.
Honestly, we all do that to one degree or another. You know, I don't really believe that our culture is a wise culture. When we suffer trauma, what is open for us to heal? Okay, and what Samite did is he went in and he played a sad song to these people. You know, And he said, in his words, I think he said, I found this sadness. I played what I was feeling inside of them, you know. And so what was he doing? He was recognizing the pain that was in their life and allowing them in through music to kind of not be defended against their pain, but with a sort of being held, be able to experience it, you know. And what was that experiencing? That experience was to fall into a vibration that recognized their pain, you know. And think about it, like, how do we transform as humans, you know? Well, we cry. And what is crying? Crying is a shaking of the human being. You know, you shake yourself. And what are you shaking? You're kind of shaking the frozen parts of yourself. And laughter, you know, that's a shaking. Orgasm, that's a shaking, you know, and music historically throughout all time has been used shamanically by shamans, by healers to put people in a state where they can literally vibrate. Okay. They vibrate between the two places they are, the place where they're frozen and the place where they want to be. And you can only do that with safety. You know, with a wise person or some wise person. You know, you're a kid, you know, and you get beat up and you feel like you're nothing and you're hurt. You know, well, what do? You run to your mom and you throw yourself on her and you give up and you weep, right? And you're held in safety and you shake yourself, you know, and music, that's one of the, I mean, there is nothing in the human arsenal that can take you from one state of being to another quicker than music. Like, you can literally heal people through music almost instantaneously. I mean, not instantaneously, but music contains with it. Look, where do we get music? We got music inside the womb. Okay, for 2 months of when we're in our development, our brain is capable of cognition and thought at 6 months. Well, we're in that sound studio for 3 more months, right? And what are we learning? That we're learning that there's a beat, and after that beat, there's another beat. It's your mother's heartbeat, but it's something that I believe never leaves us, and that's, you know. So how do we progress from trauma to being part of the music of life again? You know, music has the power to help awaken people.
I want to ask you about, I made reference to how millions of people have seen that clip of Henry on YouTube.
That was a staggering human event.
A human event. That's exactly right. And I wanted to get... Michael Rosato-Bennett, your perspective. Dan, let me start with you, though. Your sense of how – were you surprised at the kind of – it's been a sort of stunning sort of reaction, the way people are reacting not only to the film but that particular moment. I mean, it's gotten so much attention. What do you make of that?
It clearly struck a chord, pun intended, with sort of the public's heart. And in fact, it's the most viewed video about dementia, Alzheimer's ever made. So, you know, it was pretty staggering. And I think it's a result of two things. Number one, people are very frustrated with the disease. There is no good news. It is a terminal disease. But this, on the flip side, is this offered hope. So one thing I want to throw in, I know time is, you know, running short, that for people want to learn more how to do this at home with their own loved one, on the musicandmemory.org website, we have a free PDF they can download on how to do that. Or if they want to donate an iPod, we'll send these to Utah. We have a free prepaid label. And in Utah, now that there's great interest in this, we're going to need thousands of iPods. So for those who have iPods at home, to donate some. And it's that Henry video clip which really got things going. And we're thrilled to have the opportunity with Alive Inside to raise that awareness so people can get involved and help make this happen in their families and in their larger community.
Dan, what's the first step? Is it the idea is to, I guess, to have a conversation or have a sense of, I mean, because the whole idea is that this is personal music. You have to know music that resonates with them. I guess the first thing is to find music that's meaningful to the loved one, right?
Yes. So that's why the sooner, you know, with our elder relatives, while they're able to articulate, even if they don't have any disease at all, let's get that playlist together. So, and for those who are diagnosed with Alzheimer's, in the city of Toronto, anybody who's diagnosed with Alzheimer's disease, the city will give the family an iPod, they'll give them $100 in iTunes cards, and they'll help them set up. And they're doing this for 10,000 residents of the city. They see it as so important for the quality of life of the individual who has the disease and the family that has to live with them as a key way to improve quality of life.
I just want to say we're going to put all of the links to all of this on our website. It would be really terrific for people to be able to respond. Michael, your sense of how do you explain how stunning the reaction has been to that that one little moment, human event, as you said?
Well, you know, it was personally, it was pretty amazing for me. I mean, my son is part of the Reddit communities. He was 14 years old at the time. Mm-hmm. And he came running into my bedroom. He said, "Dad, you're on Reddit." And I was like, "What?" And he said, "Yeah, come see." And some kid, a kid named Rad9, had found this unfinished little clip that I had put on Dan's website. Dan wanted to show somebody something. I mean, it was never meant to be seen, really. It was there for some reason. And we watched that night. We watched that clip go from 300 views to 800 views in one night. And I thought that was just the most amazing thing in the world. And it was so great that it was my son and he caught it almost at its inception. That's how connected these kids are, you know. And it was so amazing that this came out of kids, you know. And so all these kids started, you know, sharing it. And then it's by the next morning, I think it was 175,000 people had seen it. And by the night, it was 1.6 million or something like that. And then the most amazing thing for me was like the comments, that what people were writing. You know, it was as though no one had ever had a chance to speak of this experience that many, many people had had. And I remember one kid wrote, and this is very subtle, but it's really interesting to me. He wrote, "This is the most beautiful thing I've ever seen on the internet," you know? And then another kid wrote, "This is what the internet's supposed to be."
Right.
You know? So it's like these, and that was so interesting to me. Like these kids, what they were saying to me was like, we want human connection. We, you know, and we're trying to find it in this way, but it's really hard to find it on the internet. And this clip was an empathy generator. Basically, people all over the world said, I want to feel,
yeah,
you know, and they did, and they felt together. I mean, you know, there are tragic moments in this. Like I've gotten so many people coming up to me and saying, you know, oh my God, you know, I'm a musician. My father played in a symphony, you know, he loved music his whole life. And why didn't I think of doing this? He's dead now. Why didn't I think of bringing him music? You know, and I think that's really at the core of Dan's dream is, you know, that we should, it's kind of like what he just said, you know, we should think about this before somebody gets dementia.
Michael Rosato Bennett, he directed and produced Alive Inside, a story of music and memory. Dan Cohen is founder and executive director of the nonprofit group Music and Memory. We spoke with them at last year's Sundance Film Festival. This coming Monday at 7 o'clock, the Salt Lake Acting Company is screening the film. It's going to be followed by a panel discussion in partnership with the Music and Memory Coalition of Utah. The event is in conjunction with Salt Lake Acting Company's production of Blackberry Winter, which tells the story of one woman's journey through her mother's dementia. There are more details on our website, radiowest.org. Radio West is a production of KUER News, the program produced by Benjamin Bombard and Elaine Clark. I'm Doug Fabrizio.